Welcome to Echo This, where we bring you inspiring conversations to empower hope and opportunity. I'm your moderator, Debbie Wimberly. In today's show, we are exploring the luck equation, strategized to shape your destiny. So let's talk about the luck equation. The luck equation can be seen as a conceptual framework that combines elements of preparation, opportunity, mindset, and action to shape one's perceived luck or fortune. It suggests that while chance plays a role in life's outcomes, individually, we can strategically position ourselves to maximize favorable opportunities and increase the likelihood of positive outcomes through intentional actions and mind shift changes. So how can we each apply this equation to proactively influence destiny? Well, in each of our shows, we have 5 segments that we hope will provide insights on our weekly topics that lead to empowering conversations of hope and opportunity. It is now my distinct pleasure to ask my colleagues to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Amy Weishaus, and I am a lifelong educator and learner. And my premise is that all of us have, no matter where we are and no matter what our circumstances, we have the obligation and we also have the power to create joy. And that is my mission here today.
And I'm Lisa Jones, a speaker, consultant, author that leverages the power of humor, gamification, and play as fuel to enhance collaboration, increase engagement, and maximize productivity.
And I'm Debbie Wimberly, a medical cannabis educator, health quality advocate, speaker, and I am here to help provide people with the ability to navigate through their health and life challenges to live to their absolute best life. So thank you, ladies, for being here and joining in today. And so with each of these segments, we'll be talking about different things. But when I was looking into this, and preparing for this interview, I became very curious about how each of us tackle this luck equation. So let's click our heels and let the magical exploration begin. So Amy, what is the one strategy that you rely on to be your go-to when you find yourself in a place of uncertainty that gives you hope and direction? How would you recommend someone else to utilize this practice?
I think sometimes when we have an opportunity, we have to have a mindset that we can have the confidence and the trust in ourselves that we're going to be able to meet the opportunity. Many of us have regrets. Well, I didn't do well last year, but this year is going to be my year to either increase my number of friends or increase my bank account or whatever it is. But I think the first thing we need to do is to give ourselves some self-assurance to meet an opportunity. So my go-to has become doing a little self-inventory. I call it my certainty inventory. And I will go back over certain situations where I proved to myself that I could create certainty to put me in the mode and in the mindset and in the energy and the frame that I could meet the opportunity, first of all, that I was ready for the task. So one example was when it came time to prepare for teaching. I wasn't certain where I was going to work or how I was going to get the job, but I was certain that I wanted to be a teacher and the opportunity would come to me. And then I worked very hard towards that opportunity. I tenaciously, and that's another key word that I loved, it's tenacity, to be tenacious. I was tenacious in meeting the opportunity because I did some inventory and I said, well, I got through college, I did well, my health is okay, I think I can handle a teaching job. So I took a self-inventory of where I've already been successful, and it gave me the power and it gave me the fuel to be able to meet the opportunity. So I was reflecting when we were discussing these topics on making New Year resolutions, you know, about looking for certain opportunities every year. And lately, a lot of people are coming up with a word of the year. So one of my friend's words is abundance, and the other one has peace, love, destiny. And my word for the year is clarity. And I think that's also something we need to have before we can have certainty. They're very closely aligned, and I wasn't sure which, I forget now sometimes which one I chose. Clarity and certainty are very closely aligned, and we need both in order to meet an opportunity. So I think the go-to is starting with, you know, that word for the year, perhaps, a word for the month, a word for the day, but build on your past successes and know that you have the ability to meet the opportunity. And with that little bit of obsession or drive, that's going to be my go-to, to know I've done it in the past and I can do it again.
I love that certainty inventory. Being a ex-inventory specialist, that's something that I can relate to very well and understanding. And I think a lot of people don't realize or think about themselves as being having their own inventory, but you do. So I think that's a really great point that you bring out there. And Lisa, so how do you meet this opportunity, and how would you share with someone how to take that one tidbit and use it?
Yeah, definitely. Navigating uncertainty to me is like playing the grand game of life. And my favorite strategy I like to call roll the dice resilience. And I throw the dice, I embrace the randomness, and I see what number life hands me. It's a reminder that sometimes we just need to let go, take chances, and find joy in the unexpected outcomes. So my advice here would be channel your inner game master, roll those metaphorical dice, and dance with the uncertainties. Because who knows, you might just land on a 7, which is the jackpot of newfound possibilities.
Jackpot of newfound possibilities, the number 7. So can you give an example of what it feels like to land on that jackpot?
Sure. Landing on a lucky 7 to me feels akin to an unexpected joy of becoming a parent. It's as if life dealt you a perfect hand, revealing the magic of parenthood at just the right moment. The dice roll becomes the metaphor for the miraculous journey of welcoming a child, where every number aligns to paint a portrait of love, fulfillment, and the delightful surprises that come with embracing parenthood.
Children have a way of bringing out the joy in all of us and actually bringing us to a place of being playful if we allow ourselves. So I think that I will always look at the number 7 a little differently now. Thank you.
Well, it's hard to pick one instance, but that's what kind of boils to the top for me. So thanks.
Well, that's kind of like the roll of the dice. I think that's really cool that, you know, the roll of the dice is how we, you know, we live life pretty much in reality. And when I go to talk about this, it's about talking about your health, and that's definitely the roll of the dice. And it's very common to have uncertainty when you're dealing with medical conditions and health things that are affecting you on a daily basis. So the first thing I always want to give myself and recognize is that I just need to sit down and take a good breath and let myself sit and take an inventory. I'm going to steal from Amy here. Something I have used is the inventory of my own thoughts. And why am I feeling the way I am? I find myself and sit in a quiet place and examine what it is and why I'm having this uncertainty about whatever the equation may be about what I'm trying to determine for my health, what decisions I need to make. And sometimes I'm asking the most important question: what is it that made me uncertain? And what made that uncertainty come up? Is it due to incomplete information? A level of risk, fear of failure or consequences, or there's so many things we could go down if I went down that road. But then I go to share with someone after I've done that evaluation. I go find someone to share with, and I bounce it off of a bouncing board, is what I call it, and trying to figure out why am I feeling this way and what is it. And when you do that, you can hear yourself bouncing what you're thinking out loud. And allowing yourself to hear it out loud is sometimes when clarity does come to play. And also with the person that you're bouncing off of, they can also ask you questions that maybe you haven't asked that will make you dive deeper. And it also allows you to give them the opportunity to say, you're much clearer than you think you are. and what you're thinking. So it's just a confirmation. So, you know, allow yourself to find someone that you can trust and have your own inner intuition and determine where the uncertainty lies and how you can move forward. I think that, you know, finding that plan doesn't always reside just within you. It sometimes resides with working with someone else.
Debbie, I love that you mentioned how important it is to have a sounding board, a trusted advisor or friend. That is so significant. You know, it takes different approaches. You know, there's a saying that when the student is ready, the master appears. And that master could be a mentor, somebody who maybe isn't an expert, but a mentor and an expert in life or in a situation similar to what you're facing at that time. And certainty is a muscle we have to develop by that inventory that we enjoy taking. It's very self-revealing, and it could reveal empathy for ourselves and understanding that we're human and we're ready to take this journey and take this opportunity on. But we're steeling ourselves for that. And I think bottom line is, all things said, uncertainty can be a very powerful force, a very powerful motivator, because we really can have a carte blanche and the possibilities could be amazing. So uncertainty has its value.
It served me well, I can tell you that. And I think that allowing yourself to just be curious about it, which is my word of the year, curiosity, to actually allow yourself to go down those roads. But you need to be introspective for yourself and explore what it is within you, because that's where it resides. So, yeah.
And I think it also goes back to, too, what Amy was saying with the past success to propel more successfully forward. And if you combine that with what you were saying about breathing, Debbie, I think you have a recipe for success.
Well, breathing is a very huge part in my life, as you both know. Living with lung conditions, breath becomes one of the most important practices that I have, and I never take it for granted. So, you know, but, you know, building just those small routines into your daily is a good way to start creating your own strategies for how you want to move forward in this. So, you know, hopefully someone can walk away with, between all three of us, with some strategy that they can put into play today. Now that we've set the strategy in our mind, moving into our next question, we want to talk about, how do you recognize and capitalize on opportunities that may come your way? And do you always see them at the moment, or do you realize them at a later date? I'll start with you, Lisa.
Spotting opportunities to me is like playing a game of hide and seek, but with fate. Because sometimes what happens, I'm as sharp as a detective on the case. I instantly see those golden chances when they wink at me. But other times, it's like finding a treasure map in the attic months after the pirate ship sailed. My secret here is to keep your eyes wide open, your heart light, and your imagination wild, because you never know when the next opportunity might be hiding around the corner, ready to leap out and shout, surprise!
I think that you being a detective is a really key point here, and that's one of the things that I've learned to be when it comes to your health. You really have to be a detective. So, you know, is there just a certain step that you take to begin that? I know that you keep your eyes wide open and stuff, but I mean, when you first started down becoming your own detective, was there something that was an aha moment that gave you that recognition that I need to do this?
No, I mean, there's no, for me, there isn't, I can't pinpoint one exact moment, but that's something I've done since, and it goes back to your curiosity that you spoke about earlier, Debbie. I've always been a very, very curious person, but it started for me when I was a kid. Like, I was always like investigating different things. Like, that's one of the things I wanted to be when I grew up, a detective. When they ask you when you're five in kindergarten, what do you want to be? I was saying I wanted to be a detective. I had a big magnifying glass. So I think like those kind of things started for me when I was little, but I think it's just creating awareness that these things exist. Like, just try to take more notice of your day, whether you're journaling. A good habit to start would be to record yourself on Otter IA or some similar thing, how your morning goes, and then read that back, and you can, there's clues right there.
Well, I think it's also good what you said about going back to being a child when you were a child. I think that if you have children or grandchildren or neighbor kids in the neighborhood, just look at them and look at their, how they are like a little detective. They ask a million questions. They never stop. And utilize that and put that back into play for you, because we lose that somewhere mm-hmm. as we age, and it's not a good thing. I think we need to keep it. So I think that detective is a really cool thing, and I like keeping your eyes wide open. And surprise, you never know when it will happen. So thank you for sharing that. Amy, how do you feel about the opportunity and recognizing it?
Well, sometimes the opportunity is a mistake. And we don't know that the opportunity is not what it's put out there to be. And that's tricky, because I feel my first impulse is to do some research, whether it's talking to somebody who's more knowledgeable in that arena or whatever it is. I'm amazed at, you know, my childhood with having to go to the library physically, having to carry heavy books, having to maybe know someone in the neighborhood who had an Encyclopedia Britannica, which you could never even carry, and you'd have to go to a fixed spot and be immobile, or go to the card catalog. I mean, research took hours. I don't know how we did anything else. But now it really truly amazes me that at our fingertips, we have so much research available, so much information available, that it's mind-boggling. And now we can even go to AI, and AI is doing all the processing and thinking for us and giving us even a speech, an essay. It's truly mind-boggling. Every day, I'm in awe of this. So, okay. I'm going to face the opportunity and do my due diligence and research, but that's not always the answer. But if it is the wrong opportunity, I'm still going to go with it, because I'm going to find that out little by little. And we ourselves had an opportunity where we were in a coaching program, and we went to a certain point in that program with, you know, our goals and with what we had signed up for. But the opportunity was that we were open and we met each other. And here we are, you know, with a book to be published very shortly, and with a weekly platform to encourage opportunity of wonderful, empowering conversations for people to generate ideas and come together and create opportunities. So We came by this because we were open to what opportunity was beyond the opportunity. And I think we have to see it as a domino game. And also, the most important thing that I've found here is to be coachable. We have to be open to listening to that person who's our sounding board. We have to be coachable. And we have to learn how to self-coach in the best way possible. And I think we also do that by, as you said, be curious and ask a lot of questions. One of my icons and role models was Barbara Walters. I wanted to be Barbara Walters. I wanted to have a job like Barbara Walters. And that comes from the joy of asking questions. When you have an opportunity to do that, that's one of the most important things we can ever do, is ask questions and kind of vet the opportunity to the best degree we can. And if we have to detour and go a different direction, it's okay.
I want to go back to when you're talking about gathering information and how you used to go to the library and how encyclopedias that would help you. And now we have this vast array of Google and all these search engines that have this information. How do you know that information that you're landing on is something that you can depend on, that can guide you? How do you know it's accurate information?
I don't. And I felt powerless in this arena also sometimes when, before technology, let's say a student handed in an essay and there was plagiarism. How did I know that student you know, that really wasn't in a paper, that was borrowed from somewhere else. You know, I've really faced these circumstances my whole life. And that was grueling. Now you could input a piece of a text and see if it was copied from somewhere else. Teachers actually have that software today. I once remember, and it was so startling, I once remember saying something to my colleague next to me in the curriculum room, "Oh, listen to this fascinating thing." And I was reading out loud something about embalming or whatever. It was fascinating. And he said, "Wait a minute. That sounds like something I just read on the classmate's paper." You know, so, I mean, that was like a rare, just a fluke that we discovered that there was plagiarism there. But, and it's weird because it's so ancient. It just happenstance that I really do. So, no, the answer to your question, the short answer is no. I don't know if the information is right or wrong. And I hope it doesn't harm anyone.
Well, I think that the takeaway for me in that is that don't just rely on one source. Make sure that you check multiple places and see if you're coming up with something that's similar and, you know, backing it up, because we have lots of avenues and lots of places to look. So don't just get to where you rely on one resource, I would say.
No, Debbie, you picked up on what I was thinking when Amy was talking about it, because just talking about AI, like a lot of times you have to go, you're talking about researching, you have to go back and research what AI gives you sometimes. Like you should always, whatever the output is, you should always go back and research that to make sure that's valid.
Right. We always have to be, as I say, curious. Whatever it is, be curious about it, where it came from, who wrote it, why did they write it? I mean, that's just the world we live in. And that's where I'll go with this answer, because this reminds me a little bit of my Alice in Wonderland that I live with all of my curiosity, which sends me down a road or a path of gathering information and exploring new things that I can work with to address my health and my life. And when I do that, I find so many things, paths that I can follow, and I have to really dig into it and determine which ones work best for me. It always comes back to what is the best for you, not for someone else, because so often we're always thinking about other people. And your opportunity will wind up or shows up when we're most curious, I think, and being open to determining if it's right. And so that exploration, should always take that and take a moment to remind yourself of times of the opportunity that this has shown up for you, and when it paid off and when it didn't, and then reflect on the lessons that will help you in building the next time you have to do this. I think this is where we build resilience and help serve ourselves, is by building a compass to guide us. We learn through experiences we've gone through, and the capitalizing on those good and not so good experiences gives us the opportunity to see things more clearly the next time that maybe that opportunity shows up. So now we're going to talk about what ways does continuous learning or self-improvement influence the trajectory of one's life? And is this that luck equation that I shared at the opening of the show? Amy, we'll start with you.
Well, learning and self-improvement are such an integral part of my entire life. My sister was born with Down syndrome, and her education and her learning was always a focal point of my family. And I think sometimes learning is couched in a tedious way, that learning has to be difficult, or you have to have a course of study, and you have to invest a lot of time and energy and sometimes money into learning. But I like to think of learning as a very organic process that happens every day. And I think if we look at it that way, we're going to see just how truly remarkable it is that we're learning every moment. And an opportunity recently presented itself to learn how to play Mahjong. And I went the first time. I was totally lost. It was a whole new vocabulary, suits and sets and tiles, and I was totally lost. And I had no confidence, and I said, I can't do this. But I pushed myself to learn and to go back and to try it And I have to tell you, I think I'm like a decent intermediate now. And I've met some wonderful acquaintances and we have such a good time. So Tuesday night is my Mahjong night. And it's also helping my brain process information. So, you know, cultivating learning and self-improvement, it doesn't have to be a deliberate thing, but it's happening every day. And I've learned so much from the lovely people I've met. We have a very low-key game. We don't play for money. we're very decent about it. But I think that learning is lifelong. And my mom used to have a very blunt view on it. She said, Amy, the only person, people who aren't learning, they're on the cemetery. And with that in mind, I awaken every day to feeling there's some kind of self-improvement and it could be a lifelong game that I think I'll enjoy into my old age.
I like when you talk about the fear that you kind of had of learning. And I think that this is, again, is a place where we can go back to talk about children and how we should try to model still as adults kind of what they do. They're not afraid of anything and they're willing to explore and be curious about everything. So I think that it's really important because I think through opportunity, fear is always going to show up. There's some form of fear or some form of uncertainty because you've never been there before. So it's a new opportunity. So I think that actually, you know, allowing yourself to experience that and go there and challenge yourself is one of the biggest growths that you have, is that you can see that you can step beyond that, as far as I'm concerned.
It was also the fear of embarrassment, you know, here with these experts and some people, you know, they want to play a fast game and you're too slow for them or something like that. And right away, there's a fear of not measuring up and I don't have the skill and being flustered. But when you get yourself into an environment where the people are empathetic and they're supportive and they're there for the enjoyment of the process and just the socializing and the jokes and all the silliness, then real learning can take place because the atmosphere is relaxed. And that's very important too.
Well, I think you have to remind yourself that everybody is at the same spot you are at one point. There is not one person that, well, unless whoever created the game, but I guess they had to be a little bit fearful or not sure about it as they're creating it. But, you know, we all start from that place of uncertainty when we're going into something like that and not knowing if we can do it because that's how they got there. They started in the same place. So always look at people and think they were here once, so they're going to help me or it's going to be okay. They've made it through. I can make it through. So that's kind of the way I look at that.
I just want to throw in one other observation that came to me when this question was proposed, and that is that every day we could take a little, make it a game. Lisa, be proud of me. Mm-hmm. Make it a game, and we can actually take a little inventory every night and say, what did I learn today? What did I learn today? And I think we'll surprise ourselves because I even learned the other day through a conversation with a woman I know quite a bit that she had all these pets in her lifetime. She was telling me about all these pets she had and rescue animals, and it was charming. And I was so engaged and drawn to her with this different aspect. So I learned that Marcia is a pet person, and learning that really made my day. So the learning doesn't have to be seen in a traditional pedagogic, you know, kind of learning. But what are we learning about others? What are we learning about ourselves? And that, I venture, is self-improvement.
Lisa, how do you see this?
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the luck equation. We're revisiting it again because I think of it like a magical recipe book for turning life's lemons into a feast of lemonade delights. And continuous learning and self-improvement really are the secret ingredients because they add that extra zest to the mix. It's not just about waiting for luck to knock on your door, right? It's about donning your chef's hat, seizing opportunities, and dancing with the unexpected. So what can you all do? I think that you can sprinkle a bit of curiosity, a dash of resilience, and a whole lot of laughter into the caution of life. You can stir up a potion that's not just lucky, but downright enchanting when you do that, Debbie.
I love that you made a recipe book out of this because I think, you know, when we think about a recipe book, we think about all the ingredients that it takes to make a dish. Well, stop and think about all the ingredients that it takes to make you and all the things that make you function. So I think that's a really cool way to look at it. And yeah, now I'm a recipe book. So thank you.
I'm a big analogy person, so it helps me understand things easier. So I put it in that perspective, and hopefully others listening can appreciate that as well.
Well, I see this as an open book, but now I see it as an open recipe book, thanks to you, Lisa, when it comes to taking care of your health and advocating for what you need daily. I am writing in this book on a daily basis, trying to understand what is happening within myself, what is my body trying to tell me, and getting acquainted with myself. I think that one of the things we don't realize quite often is that we don't talk about and teach how to take care of your health and the opportunities that you have. Well, health is an ever-evolving thing. And think about it. You start aging the moment you're born. You don't think about that when somebody's born. You think about new life and all that, but you don't think about it. At that moment, you start aging. But we don't start addressing our general health and how we can take care of it until we become sick. And so then we have to open up that book and start taking notes and realizing, and that's something we're not taught either, which is something that I talk about, and how you can learn to sit with yourself, pay attention to the small wins that you have or the small things that are changing in your body, as well as the big wins, because talking about health, it's hard to recognize sometimes the differences between big and small wins, and sometimes you don't see the small wins. But by allowing yourself to examine yourself daily and understanding what's happening, and that may seem like an overkill, but I trust me, if you sit with yourself, listen to yourself, take the chance to look at any changes within your body, it will tell you a story, because your body speaks to you on a daily basis. It doesn't matter if you're 15, 25, 35, 65. It changes. We're not supposed to stay in the same place all the time. We're supposed to evolve. And by evolving means we learn about ourselves and engage with ourselves and get wiser as we grow older. But as we age and we start listening to this and taking an inventory of who we are and what we do, we get wiser so that we do make better decisions. And allow yourself to stay curious, to come to play, so that the equation, I think, is about opening us up. By being curious always about myself and looking and being curious about other people, that gives us the opportunity to build a path that we want to go down.
Yes, Debbie, I couldn't agree more. And also, too, with the whole recipe thing, everyone has an individual recipe for health. So it's not all one shoe fits all type thing. So keep that in mind too. We're building our own recipes. Like, it doesn't have to be what your neighbor has, or as Amy says, the person sitting next to you, it's going to be different. So dash of this, a dash of hope, a dash of whatever you put in it, it's different.
Yes, I think that's one of the points I forgot to put in there, Lisa, and thank you for bringing me back, because we are all unique and we're supposed to be. We're not supposed to be like someone else. All right, let's dig into the fun enigma. So what if the pursuit of personal growth, instead of leading to fulfillment and happiness, ultimately results in feelings of inadequacy and discontentment as you're constantly striving for unattainable goals? How do you recognize you're going down the wrong path, and can you turn it around? We'll start with Amy on this one.
I started reflecting on the fact that when you say self-improvement, you're already stating, well, something needs to be improved. Something can get to a better level. So there's kind of a little cautionary thing there about the inadequacy and how we can perhaps wind up with feelings, worse feelings of inadequacy or discontent. And I think that happens sometimes when we start the journey in the wrong mindset and we feel we're not enough for the task. And sometimes the people that we are on this path with, whether they're our mentors or our classmates, our family even. There are a lot of naysayers. There are a lot of people who seem to be excelling in areas that we want to improve in, but we're not quite there yet. So the nemesis is comparison. I think the inadequacy feelings, rather than bolstering ourselves, can really surface and make things worse when we feel we're not measuring up to the other people. And in comparing, we do ourselves a great disservice. And there's where I think we can't make other people the authority. We can't make other people in our group or in our own standard of where we need to be. We can't make that the benchmark. I really believe that I've noticed a lot of spiritual jewelry lately. I see people wearing little pendants that say, I am enough. I am enough. And so there's kind of, I guess, a paradox there. I'm enough, but I need to constantly self-improve. So we're all caught in that tug of war with ourselves. And we have to trust not solely in the expert or the mentor that's going to make us feel even more inept, more inadequate, more unhappy with our lives. We cannot risk that. We've got to be very positive in our mindset, and we need to surround ourselves with passionate, sincere, and caring people. And we also hopefully will find people of mentor caliber or people like ourselves who know how the shoe pinches, and we know what it is to overcome and to triumph over adversity and to thrive. We have to surround ourselves with that kind of safety net so that self-improvement doesn't really set us back. It can.
And I wonder, Amy, how much, when you're thinking about this question, how much do you think this has to do with things that have been given to you or influences from family and places like that? Because I always think about sometimes my self-doubt that I used to live with came from something that I was taught as a child or that was ingrained in me as a child. And not that anybody meant anything bad about it, but it's just, you know, I can remember a time when mother was like, what will people think? I was Little Miss Redhead of 1963. And I had to go on stage and show off my pretty red hair for a hair dye, which my hair was not dyed. And then I dropped a potato on the floor when we were having our dinner, and I knew I was going to get in trouble. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I dropped a potato on my floor. And mother's like, shh, be quiet. Nobody will know. What are people going to think? Be quiet. And so, you know, I wonder when you talk about that, how much of that do you think played into some of yours?
Well, I think that's a very intriguing question. We often judge ourselves based on other people's expectations of us. And, you know, that's where I'm resonating with what you're saying. We have a certain expectation to behave a certain way or to follow in the family footsteps. I know students, younger brothers and sisters are always stereotyped. Oh, you're Jonathan's sister. Oh, you're his little sister. And students always try to overcome the reputation. Maybe the sibling is very bright and this other sibling has learning challenges, you know, or not as skilled in sports as the one that came before them. So I think from the womb we're compared, we're expected to behave in certain ways, and I don't think any of us can escape it. So I think I had certain responsibilities also, you know, maybe little burdens at that time in my life because my sister was less capable, and I had to be, you know, pretty good to help her and teach her and be with her. And, you know, I don't think I really understood then that it was a little extra that I was saddled with. And sometimes that makes us a little older and mature and sensitive and empathetic before our time. But it's not a bad thing. It didn't hurt me. So I think the question is excellent. And we live our lives, and then later on, in perspective, we can see whether this harmed us or not. And some people are in therapy for years trying to figure it out. But I think it's a very integral part of life that we can't escape.
Agreed. So now we're going to go to Lisa and let her bring us into some play here and take us into this realm and see where she takes us.
So thank you for that. We are going to probably be talking about a game, but first I want to talk about the cosmic dance of self-improvement. And if we imagine it's a playful game of hopscotch on the pathway to personal growth. So we can start there. And when imagine that you're on this hopscotch, when the squares start to feel more like quicksand, that is where the numbers become a dizzying maze. And it's time for you to fill laughter-filled pit stop. So you want to recognize the signs. The signs, it's like catching a mischievous wink from the universe. And my advice here, you want to swap those unattainable ideals for a skipping rope of self-compassion and embrace the joy of the journey, because that's what it's all about, the joy of the journey. And remember that in the game of personal growth, the only score that truly matters is the one where you're having the most fun and the one that is against yourself. That's right, you heard me right. Against yourself, not others.
Against yourself, but love the journey. I think that's very insightful to a way to look at it and a new approach to maybe for some of us to even think about it, because again, I'm going to go back to kids and how they enjoy their journey every day. I think you have trouble putting your kids to bed at night when they're young because they still want to stay up and explore and they have to have fun. Lisa and I were having a conversation just recently about trying to get her daughter down to bed and she was still ready to go. And I did come back and tell her, well, she has a whole lot of life to still explore and learn. And I think that's what's really important. And she was doing it all against for herself. You know, it's for what she needs. So I think that's a really good point that you shared there, Lisa. Thank you.
And it's so true. I mean, the other point of it is, this is before, like, remember, if you date back to when we were kids, that comparison trap, you're like, oh, what's Susie doing? Or how about you're always comparing yourself to somebody. Don't compare yourself to somebody else. Compare yourself to yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And or yourself yesterday, I should say. Yourself an hour ago.
Well, me, this one is like, first and foremost, be true to yourself and recognize who you are. Because I do think what Amy picked on here a little bit is about always looking at other people trying to see someone in themselves. And no, you're an individual, like we talked about earlier. You're unique and individual, and you need to embrace that and celebrate that. I think that's one of the biggest joys I've learned, is that I don't need to be like someone else. I don't need to try to be someone else. I just need to be me and live comfortably within that space. And when you learn to do that, that's where you'll find your best self. And that's when you'll be able to try to elevate and maybe help someone else. So I think it's really important to recognize you are the transformation. You are your own personal growth. And that happiness builds and starts inside of you. There's not one person outside in this world that can help me and make me happy. It comes from inside of me. I have to make the choice when I'm talking to someone. And if they're in a bad mood, okay, I can either go down that path with them, or I can say, you know what, that's just not for me today. I get to make that decision. No one else does. So take the time and make decisions that work for you and your life and for what you're going through today, because today is what you have. So take that and allow yourself, I don't want us. It's okay. I don't want to do that. And allow yourself to say, I do want to go down a journey or a path that leads me to happiness, and stay in a place that makes you feel good. Because when you're living in chronic illness and chronic pain, it's really hard. So I'm staying true to myself and following the path that I want, because it's really easy to get sucked in and feeling no purpose in somebody else's life. So take the time to invest in yourself. Believe in yourself, because you are important and you matter. Ended up with our final segment here, and we will close this segment with a journey of personal transformation. How do you describe the subtle shifts to luck and fortune, recognizing the moments where serendipity and opportunity align to propel you forward? Additionally, how do you celebrate these transformation, acknowledging the role of luck while also honoring the effort and resilience that contributes to your growth and success. Lisa, we'll start with you.
All right, thanks, Debbie. This makes me think of a big puzzle because each piece seems like a random stroke of luck and scattered in different directions. So in one corner, I can discover the serendipitous encounters that set the stage for change, a chance meeting here, an unexpected opportunity there, and the puzzle hints at the dance of fortune. Yet, if we look at it differently, in the center, surrounded by the dance, are pieces that I deliberately place. They represent the countless hours of hard work, the resilience in the face of challenges, and the unwavering commitment to personal growth. Celebrating the transformation isn't just about acknowledging luck. It is about reveling in the synergy of chance and effort, because each piece contributes to the grand design of your journey. My suggestion would be to honor both the magic of serendipity and the craftsmanship of your own evolution.
Celebrate the magic. I think we all kind of, we've been on this luck conversation now for 2 weeks. And I think that we're all discovering new things about magic through this conversation. And luck does play a part in that. So I'm really excited about how we've been going through this process and talking about this. We're all learning a lot about ourselves, I think. And we're also learning a lot about one another. And I hope that everyone can walk away with a little bit of magic from today. So where do you fall on this, Amy?
I was thinking about the word transformation. And I think when we talk about luck and a process leading to transformation, some people, I think, see it as I'm here and then I arrive over here and this amazing thing happens. Maybe sometimes the impatience is it should happen overnight. And it's not so much about luck as about understanding that transformation occurs in little increments every day. And I was thinking all of a sudden of all the weight loss magic pills now. You take these pills or supplements and you're going to be, even the show, big loser. You got to be a big loser and lose it fast and lose it big and lose it dramatically. Or you know, a celebrity looks wonderful. I mean, gorgeous, but did it on some kind of pills and bingo. And I think all those messages in our society show us that, you know, that to me is luck, to hit the right, you know, regimen or the right substance that's going to do something, which I prefer to think food is our medicine and that proper eating will do that function for us, you know, for weight loss or just healthy, clean living and clean eating. So I really took myself on a journey with this question, and I came up with the fact that transformation is not this big, dramatic process. We have to celebrate it and honor it every day. So if you lose a half a pound, you did great. It's a half a pound you're not carrying around and taxing your heart, or, you know, you're buttoning the button a little bit, you know, it's less tight. So I think we can all understand that analogy with weight loss. And if we just take pride in the fact that we had more discipline, more control, more satisfaction with ourselves, or going to a place where they had a very healthy menu and enjoying that with some friends, or making some new friends who have similar goals for their transformation, I think then we're on the right track. We have to transform at our own pace, go slowly, go to your own drummer, and celebrate when you do that little tiny thing that is monumental. When you add it up, then you're going to get the big bang at the end. And that's what we're looking for. Slow, slow but steady.
I think at your own pace is really important there. I think that no two people will go about transformation the same. So I think that's a really good point. And I think that, you know, backing on to what you're talking about there, and it's increments of small things. When we're talking about health in general, transformation is sometimes it's really hard to see. But sometimes it has a real glaring light, and it depends on what that transformation is, and you can look at how that transformation in your health has been taking place if you go back and look at it. Because I think that's where we don't pay enough attention, is we don't look at those small things that happen and build up to accumulate to something that's a glaring transformation in your health. That could be in a bad way, that could be in a good way. And we need to learn to acknowledge the things that are happening in not a good way so that we can reverse them and turn them into something that we can celebrate. And that's not easy to do when we're talking about quality of health today. It's hard to find doctors that are willing to work with you through that transformation. You're looking for a partner. And so it's like you need to learn again to take the time to do an inventory of yourself and where you are in your health today, and why listening to your body and understanding it is so important, because that's your guide to your transformation and in managing your health. Because there is no way to prevent to go through this life without having something in your health that occurs. Whatever it may be, there's something that's causing that, and we need to learn to investigate and explore that, and that comes through the transformation that we go through by exploring ourselves and seeing what we're going through. It happens on a daily basis when we're talking about your health. Recognize them and celebrate those small things and let them add up to be a good thing. But at the end of the day, give yourself gratitude for everything that you accomplished today. Don't think about yesterday. Don't think about tomorrow. Think about the transformation that you had today. It makes you feel good when you do that. Don't end your day thinking about what did not happen. End your day thinking about what did happen and what was good about it. And allow yourself to go to sleep with that rest and that gratitude. It's a transformation that really does bring healing if you allow yourself to do that. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, as you were all talking, I came up with a little acronym today, and I used Debbie's word earlier for breathe, and I came up with a summary of our little show today. So breathe, be detective, research, engage a mentor, ask yourself, teach yourself, what can you learn from yourself, heart, lead with your heart, and easy at your own pace.
I think that's a really good summary, Lisa. Thank you for that.
Just breathe.
Yeah, that's great. So we'll end here. I want to thank everyone for joining in and tuning in to Echo This. We appreciate your feedback and comments. You can find us on social media, Instagram and LinkedIn at Echo Together. That's Echo, the number 2, G-E-T-H-E-R. So we love to hear what you have to say about these shows. Something you'd like for us to talk and dive into and talk about and share where we come from on that and give tips, please let us know. Thank you again, and always echo this.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo. Listen in for empowering conversations of hope and opportunity.